శ్రీ కృష్ణ ప్రేమిస్ విజిట్ టు శ్రీ రమణ మహర్షి పార్ట్ 3 బై ఎస్ చక్రవర్తి కంటిన్యూడ్ ఫ్రమ్ జూలై ఇష్యూ. ఇన్ దిస్ ఇన్స్టాల్మెంట్ వి ఫాలో శ్రీ కృష్ణ ప్రేమ్ ఆఫ్టర్ హీ లీవ్ శ్రీ రమణాశ్రమం టు కంటిన్యూ ఆన్ ఎ సౌత్ ఇండియా టూర్ ఇన్ 1948. డెవటీస్ ఫ్రమ్ ద ఆశ్రమ్ అసిస్టెడ్ హిమ్ ఆన్ దిస్ ట్రిప్ అండ్ శ్రీ రమణ మహర్షి వాజ్ ఇంట్రెస్టెడ్ టు నో అబౌట్ ఆల్ ది ఈవెంట్స్ దట్ ఫాలోడ్ వెన్ ఇట్ వాజ్ మోర్ ఆర్ లెస్ సెటిల్డ్ that I was to accompany Gopalda Sri Krishna Prem on his southern trip. I was naturally elated at my rare good luck, but the other side of my mind was sunk in deep anxiety. While my heart was filled with unalloyed joy at the opportunity of being of some service to Gopalda, in the sense that I would be allowed to bear the expenses of this trip, my heart was also profoundly agitated over my lack of funds to accomplish this. I was so restless that I could not meditate. In truth, I could not sit quietly. At this crucial point, a sort of miracle occurred. My Gujarati friend, Jivaranjani, who had been doing sadhana at Sri Ramanashramam for some years, noticed how upset I was and came to my succor. In reply to his inquiry, I told him my predicament. I had insufficient hard cash with me, and although a monthly installment came by money order from Calcutta, there was no time to get more. Jivaranjani said he would lend the required amount, though even he did not have enough in hand, he would have to get it from the bank and would send it to me through Balarama Reddy, who was to meet us later at the Vilupuram station. What a relief it was. I could breathe again. We eventually left for the station with Gopalda telling me that he would travel third class and that in order to avoid his being pestered by curious members of the public, I should keep the window closed on his side of the compartment when the train was to stop for any length of time at the station, and also to keep the door of any waiting room closed if we had to wait at a junction. When we arrived at Pondicherry, Mantu Mama, Dilip Roy, joyfully received us at the station. Gopalda and Dilip were cracking jokes and all appeared to be well. But when we reached Dilip's flat, we had to face one shock after another. Before allowing us to settle down, Dilip insisted on finding out what Gopalda thought of the Maharishi. And he started by saying that the Maharishi was regarded as a fully realized Mahatma of the Jnana Marga, namely the path of knowledge. But Gopalda stopped him short and said, Dilip, I don't know how you found the Maharishi, but let me tell you that I found him nothing but love with capital L. Dilip looked very small and stammered out, well, Krishna Prem, if you say so, I must accept it. Then he pointed at me and said, my nephew also said that, but I couldn't believe it. The second blow came when Dilip was taking us around his enormous flat built in the days of the French Raj and was telling us what arrangements he had made for us. When he came to the bathroom and toilet, Gopalda remarked, sorry, but I just can't possibly use the water pipe for the bathroom first pass through the toilet with its commodes. So, Gopalda would not use that water for bathing, much less for puja. Nor would he use the toilet. That was that. Krishna Prem practiced orthodox Vaishnava traditions. Dilip's face fell and he said, I made all these arrangements especially for you. Gopalda again expressed his regrets but stuck to his guns. Now what? Surely, said Gopalda, you have ordinary service latrines for the servants, so there were. But Dilip pointed out that they were at a long distance, right at the end of the compound. That was all right for Gopalda. And for the 2 or 3 days that we stayed with Dilip, Gopalda used those latrines for his bath. There was a municipal water tap on the road in front of the house, and Gopalda used that public tap for bathing and for puja. Dilip had arranged for Gopalda to have a special darshan of the mother. After offering his pranams, Gopalda asked her Duplessis so that he could surrender to Sri Krishna. The mother looked at him for a few seconds and then said, "But you have surrendered to Sri Krishna?" "Not enough," replied Gopalda. When Dilip took us over to the ashram, he pointed out a building under construction, which, when completed, would, if my memory serves me, house classes on comparative religion and sadhana. Dilip repeatedly asked Gopalda for his views, but Gopalda held his peace. Eventually, he replied, "Well, Dilip, I see no connection between comparative religion and sadhana." Dilip did not expect such a rejoinder and said sorrowfully, "Krishna Prem, how could he say such a thing?" Gopalda replied, "Since you pressed me for my opinion, I told you what it is." Dilip had arranged a large gathering where Gopalda would first speak and then entertain with Bengali Kirtan songs. This would be held in Dilip's old-fashioned spacious flat, whose carpeted hall could easily hold 100 people that evening. Not only the hall, but also the upper landing and even the stairs were packed with people. Gopalda spoke just a few words, saying that he knew nothing more than what Bhagavad Gita says in chapter 9, verse 34. "Fix your mind on me, give yourself in love to me, sacrifice to me, prostrate yourself before me, having thus united your whole self to me, with me as your goal, to me shall you come." Whenever Gopalda was called upon to speak, he usually quoted the first line of this verse. On this occasion, when Gopalda had finished speaking, Dilip started to sing. Even an unmusical person like me could sense that this was not the same Dilip who would himself weep and make others weep by his singing of devotional songs. I had had a similar reaction in the recent past when Dilip sang in Calcutta, but I was not prepared for what happened next. Dilip suddenly stopped singing and looked at Gopalda. But Gopalda bent his head and remained silent, and Dilip got up and left the hall. Everyone was stunned. Gopalda looked at me but said nothing. After a few minutes, Ranidi announced that Dilip asked to be forgotten. He was not well and there would be no more songs. Ranidi was a distant relation of ours, wife of Sisir Maitra, professor of philosophy at Banaras Hindu University. She was a disciple of Sri Aurobindo and had renounced the world. She then requested Gopalda to come with her as Dilip wanted to speak with him. Gopalda returned after an hour or so and told me that Dilip was upset and crying because he said he no longer felt bhakti in himself when he sang. Gopalda had told him that this was not surprising because Dilip for a long time had been more interested in translating and singing songs in foreign languages than in his old way of singing devotional songs from his heart. Dilip retorted that Sri Aurobindo himself appreciated Dilip's new mode of singing and encouraged it. "In that case," said Gopalda, "he should continue to follow his guru's instructions in this as in all matters and should not ask for Gopalda's advice." During Gopalda's stay at Dilip's place, he never really had any time of his own. In the daytime, there would always be lots of visitors, and after dinner, Dilip would corner him and would go on talking with him till the small hours of the morning. I tried to keep awake and to digest the topics of the conversation, but soon I would be snoring. I shall now narrate another incident which played a very important part in Gopalda's trip. A certain Gujarati young man, Ashir Bhai, whom I had seen at Ramanashramam, accosted me and implored me to arrange a private meeting with Gopalda. I explained why I could not help him, but he kept on coming and pleading. He said it was of the utmost importance that he should be allowed to convey to Gopalda a message or direction he had received from a Mahatma. He also promised not to take up more than 5 minutes of Gopalda's time. I asked him to wait as Gopal Das was busy with some visitors and then took the first opportunity to apprise Gopal Das of this curious request, and I asked him to see Asher Bhai for just a minute or two. I brought him in and he fell at Gopal Das' feet. He said he had come for Sri Aurobindo's darshan and was sleeping on the veranda of an acquaintance's house the night before. An unknown Mahatma appeared in his dreams and pressed upon him the importance of serving the European Mahatma at present visiting the ashram, and that he would thereby earn great merit. Gopal Das replied that he did not see how he could help because he was not in need of any assistance from anyone, but he offered him his blessings. Asher Bhai was adamant and asked Gopal Das for permission to accompany us on our trip south so that he could serve Gopal Das. He hurried to say that he would meet all his own expenses and that he would not impose himself in any way. Gopal Das then said he could accompany us if he so wished, and Asher Bhai said he would keep contact with me to ascertain our program. Gopal Das was puzzled but attached no great importance to all this. Now we come to the great day. We continued.